Hey there, podcast family. T-Bone here to talk about the 3D Dentist Digital Implant Continuum. Are you ready to start placing dental implants, but feeling a bit hesitant and or overwhelmed? I know that feeling. I've been there. Let's change that together. Imagine not just learning about dental implants in a classroom, but actually performing surgeries on real patients right here in North Carolina, guided every step of the way by our expert 3D mentors. This is dental implant learning at its best, using techniques that are safe, predictable, and confidence-boosting. They're exactly what I use in my own practice, so you know they work. Our course goes beyond clinical skills. We prepare you to successfully integrate high-demand implant services into your practice, transforming your career by attracting new patients and elevating your practice. And it doesn't end with the course. Completing our program is just the beginning of a new journey. You'll be a part of a community of confident, skilled dentists with ongoing support to ensure lasting success and growth. After all, this is about mastering a skill that can transform your career, just like it did for me. So, are you ready to take your practice to the next level? Visit www.3d-dentist.com, check out our upcoming sessions, and join us to revolutionize your practice. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now let's get back to this week's episode.
Welcome to T-Bone Speaks with Dr. Tarun Agarwal, where our goal is to change the way you practice dentistry by helping you achieve clinical, financial, and personal balance. Now, here's your host, T-Bone.
Hello, and welcome back for another episode of the T-Bone Speaks podcast. And we are ready to kick off season number 2. And our hope is that we start getting focused in terms of our themes for the season and getting in a better groove. And my goal is to have about 15 episodes per season. And then we'll go through, just like with TV shows, we'll go through a period where we'll probably play some of our more popular episodes from previous seasons, some replays, some encore editions, and then we'll move on to a next season. And then we'll kind of probably have 2 or 3 seasons per year and go from there. So I'm excited to get in season 2. And my focus for season 2 is going to be to interview other dentists and focus on having a conversation about what's going well in their practice and what's not going well, and try to have a two-way conversation to where we can learn from other dentists instead of just learning from those who are gurus or well-known in the dental community. Let's learn from those who are not so well known in the community, but yet have successful practices, or even learn from those who are new to dentistry and see how they got there and where they're at and what they're doing and what they're struggling with, and get some insight. I think there's so much to learn from other people that I would like to start bringing in some lesser known guests, let's call it, and see what we can go from there. So to kick off the season, I'm going to have an interview that started off as a single episode and actually is going to turn into 2 episodes because they went quite a bit long. And I interviewed a relatively new graduate, Dr. Jennifer Lopez, out of Miami, Florida. And our conversation just kind of started organically, and really by the time it was done, it was 1 hour and 60 minutes, so you know, almost 2 hours. And we talked about so many different things, from, you know, where she was born and how she got into dentistry, to her experience in dental school, to her experience in residency, to her experiences of being an associate and CE classes. And then we ended the conversation with her talking to me about asking me some questions about some different things. And I really enjoyed the format. And I think it's kind of where I want to take season 2. Let's go ahead and get started with the first episode of season 2, our first part of the interview with Dr. Jennifer Lopez. All right, everybody. Welcome back for another episode of T-Bone Speaks. And today we're going to do something a little bit different. I have met a young dentist at one of our workshops, and I think I have fallen in love. So I invited her on the podcast as a way to get to know her better. It's our first date. Don't tell my wife that, anybody, but, and she's famous. It's Dr. Jennifer Lopez, and given the name, being a Latina woman, you must imagine that she works in Miami, Florida, and that's where she is.
So she's a young practicing dentist in Miami, Florida, and she was at one of our CEREC workshops in Raleigh recently, and I thought it would be an unbelievably great idea to bring on a young dentist and just talk a little bit about some of the successes and struggles and challenges. And I wanted to pick her brain about what made her as a young dentist come to our workshop, and then hopefully she can pick my brain on, as a young dentist, some questions she has. So Jennifer, how are you doing today?
Good. Thank you so much for having me.
So what's your background like technically? Because I think all, you know, I say Lopez and I think Mexican.
Of course you do. Everybody does. Everybody that's outside of Florida thinks the same way.
It's No, that's not true. That's true. Anybody north of Palm Beach.
That's, yes. North of Fort Lauderdale. How about that?
even Fort Lauderdale, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I was born and raised in Miami. I'm of Cuban Colombian descent. My dad's Cuban, my mom's Colombian.
So your dad came over on a tire?
He did. Two tires.
Two tires. And yep. He had cocaine in there to bring your mom over.
Exactly. Exactly. They made a pit stop and then they brought it over.
That's kind of out of the way, just so you know.
He took a little detour.
Yeah. That was a lot of paddling he had to do there. People are going to think I'm totally racist, and I'm not completely.
It's fine. You have to have a good sense of humor.
Well, I'm just stereotypical. That's all.
Yeah, it's okay.
So you were born and raised in Miami.
Yep.
Where there are more Cubans than in Cuba.
Yes, that is definitely true.
And you actually learned English?
I did, first language. But at home, we strictly speak Spanish.
Oh, what's that great Cuban place there? The green one. Cafe
Versailles.
Yeah. That place is great. There's one in the mall. There's one in the airport now.
Yes, there is. It's great.
That's when I knew it went downhill.
At the airport. But you know what? I get excited when I see it at the airport, or when, like, if I've been like in a long trip and I come back and I see it, I'm like, oh gosh, I'm home. It feels good. So.
But you know what sucks really? And this is not what we're supposed to talk about, but that's what I feel like talking about. Okay. You know what really sucks is like, my first introduction to Cuban food was I had like a Cuban sandwich at like Cuisinos or something. Okay.
Oh gosh.
And
no.
It was so bad that my wife is from Fort Lauderdale, Miami. And when we met, she was in school in Miami. And so when I went down to visit her, she's like, we should go eat Cuban food. I'm like, dude, I don't want no Cuban sandwich. Those things are horrible. You know, being from small town North Carolina, I thought Cuban food was Cuban sandwiches from Cuisinos. And
oh,
I was
gosh.
Like, I didn't want that.
I don't even think we have Quiznos here anymore. I think like it was on and running like for about a few years and then that was it.
You guys have Miami subs.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
But, you know, I do. I liked Pollo Tropical and Chicken Kitchen.
I know. I did my residency in Chicago for a year. And when I finally got back, I was so happy because of Pollo Tropical because it's such an easy, you know, it's kind of healthy. I mean, more or less, but
it's actually real chicken.
Yeah, exactly. And some good black beans and rice.
You gotta get the tropi chop. Yeah.
There you go.
I know entirely too much. All right, so Jennifer, tell us a little bit about you. So our listeners probably don't know you, and I want to keep it that way so I can keep you to myself. So tell me a little bit about you. How'd you get into dentistry and all of that stuff?
Okay. Well, so you guys already know I was born and raised here. I got into dentistry because from a very young age, I got exposed to the dental world because I had to get a lot of procedures done. So from 8 years old, I
had to get as a patient.
Exactly. And what was nice is that I really liked my dentist. She was a female dentist. She was very kind, gentle. And I liked my orthodontist as well. So I had to get braces at 8 years old, I believe. I had to get some surgical procedures done, like the exposing bone of my canine. So I was always in the office and I really liked being there. I liked the atmosphere and I liked the way the people treated me. So that's how I got exposed to it. And from an early age, like going on to high school, I started shadowing.
At the same place that you went to school, where the same place you got to work?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so I just stuck with it from high school and I planted it in my brain and I was like, I'm going to do this. And that's what I did.
Okay. And then, so you decided you want to be, you know, started having this love for dentistry, and then you graduated high school from Miami, and then what happened there?
So I actually went to Florida International University for my undergrad.
That's FIU. Where's that at?
It's a little bit north of University of Miami. It's on 8th Street and 107th. I don't know if you're familiar with the streets, but
that's almost the hood.
It's kind of by the Everglades. You know where the Everglades is?
Yeah, I dumped some bodies over there.
Along with the Colombians, huh?
No, that and the value jet plane was down there.
Oh. So, yeah. So during college, I was shadowing. And then, you know, I was, you know, involved with the Pre-Dental Society. And yeah, I applied. I actually took a year off before applying to dental school. I did like a study abroad trip in Italy for a month. I worked at a dental office as an appointment coordinator for 6 months. And during that time is when I applied.
So did you, can I ask you an honest question here?
Sure.
Were you forced to take a year off because you didn't get in? Or did you not apply and then decided to apply?
The reason I took the year off is because my first set of DAT scores were not as competitive.
Okay.
And I was like, I'm not going to waste a ton of money applying to schools, me knowing myself that I'm not happy with these scores. I'm going to retake them. And I'm going to, you know, I want to become a more competitive applicant. So I took the year off and I worked at the office and, you know, and I'm glad I did. Because I didn't want to feel rushed and have any regrets or feel bad that I didn't get in. You know, we're all type A, like us dentists are very type A and very competitive. And, you know, we're very hard on ourselves. So I was like, you know what, let me just take the year off and we'll go from there.
So, okay. So just to give you an idea, if you don't mind me asking, what were your DAT? I never took the DAT, so I don't quite understand this.
Really?
But, yeah, it's a long story. But
how are you a dentist?
I'm not really a dentist. I just fake it. I just fake one in real life. So, in all seriousness, I went to a program where I got into dental school out of high school, essentially. And as long as I maintained a certain GPA, I didn't have to take the DATs. So
that's great.
No, it's awesome. So your score went from what to what in that year off?
So the first time around, I believe I got a 17.
Okay. And that's not competitive?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
And like competitive is anything above a 20, I'd say.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the second time around, I got a 20.
Okay. So you went from dumb to competitive.
Exactly.
Okay. I'm just making sure.
Exactly.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. And then
I wanted to make sure my sciences scores were, you know, competitive too. So those were about 20, 21. The math, I didn't care because, I mean, I'm not, to be honest, myself, like I'm not a good
We have calculators. And as a dentist, you don't need to know math. I mean, we don't need to know how to calculate and how to collect money.
Exactly.
I would say that actually, outside of your scores, it probably helped you a lot to actually have some experience being in the front. I'm glad you worked in the front and not in the back of a dental practice.
Yes, I always remember this. The office manager at that practice always told me while I was working there, she's like, Jennifer, you are getting an immense amount of experience here because you know what it feels like to be in the front. As a practitioner, we are very good with our hands. We could do it, but we don't know really, in the beginning, it could be kind of hard to have attain those people skills and communication and how it really works with the books. So I'm really glad that I got that experience.
And even that, and just knowing what kind of complaints patients have and, you know, because
exactly.
a lot of times you can cut those off in the back if you just knew what things people were calling and complaining about.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. As you talk about this, I'm trying to get my intern who's taken another year off before she applies to school to get married. I'm trying to get her to move to the front in our office and she's resisting me a little bit. I'm going to have to make her listen to this. Okay. So you worked in the office for a year. You applied to dental school. Obviously you got in. Where'd you go to dental school at?
I went to Nova Southeastern.
Okay. So you went right there in Plantation.
Exactly.
Okay. So my wife went to medical school there, DO school there.
And, nice.
It's
a great program.
It's a secondary medical school. It's a DO school, right? So she's going to get so mad if she listens to this when I say that.
No, they have an excellent program from what I know.
And they have a very good dental school there as well.
They do. Yes.
Okay.
I had a very good experience. I'm glad I stayed. I was going to go to University of Maryland and I was ready to go, you know, with room and board, everything. And, you know, last minute, I just changed my mind because, you know, my family was here. So I was like,
so Maryland was going to be free?
What do you mean free?
Like room and board was going to be free in Maryland?
No, like I had already like reserved an apartment.
Oh, so you had gotten in.
Yeah, I had gotten in and I had put my deposit down, everything. And last minute, I just changed my mind and I stayed here because, you know, family, and I'm very close to my family. So, and I'm glad I did. I am glad I stayed.
Wow. Okay. Where else did you get into school at?
I got into NYU.
Well, that place is way expensive.
Yes. Yeah. And then just like, living there, it's crazy.
My sister-in-law went to dental school there.
Really? Yeah. Nice. I mean, New York is awesome. It's just, well, she's what I didn't like about it.
She's lucky her parents could pay for that, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
I think he spent $500,000 putting her at their school.
And their classes is crazy. There's like 300 or more, probably.
That's a money-making machine. I don't know. I'm just saying that. But okay, so you got into NYU and Maryland.
And VCU, Virginia.
Okay. Oh, in Richmond. That's good.
Yeah.
So, but you chose Nova because it was close to home.
Closer to home and weather.
Yeah. You people and your weather. Okay.
We people, yes. I mean, and so I've been here my whole life. I've done all my schooling. So, you know, once I was done with dental school, I was like, okay, it's my time to go. And like, so I applied to a GPR and I went to Chicago for a year.
Why'd you apply for a GPR? Did you not feel that you were ready?
Stay with us. We'll be right back. Hey, podcast family, T-Bone here. Are you a dentist looking to elevate your practice and profits? Then pay close attention. Introducing the 3D Business Mastermind, the dental business coaching program designed for dentists who want to see real results. I've walked the path of practice ownership for nearly 25 years. I know your challenges. I felt your pain. This is your opportunity to overcome the chaos, the busyness, and the financial frustrations of owning a dental practice. Imagine a dental practice where your appointment book is highly productive, doing the dentistry you enjoy, your team is self-motivated, and your profits keep climbing. That's what the 3D Business Mastermind is all about. In this exclusive mastermind, you'll join a league of ambitious dentists driven to elevate their practices. You'll gain access to proven strategies, personalized coaching, and a community that understands your journey. So if you're ready to supercharge your dental practice and enjoy the success you deserve, visit www.3d-dentists.com and take the first step towards a brighter future in dentistry by filling out the 3D Business Mastermind application. Now, let's get to this week's episode.
So the dentist I used to work for when I was an appointment coordinator, I picked his brain a bit when I was deciding whether or not I wanted to go to private practice straight out of dental school or a GPR. And he told me straight out, he's like, Jen, like, if you were applying for a position as an associate in my office, I would say go do a GPR. I wouldn't hire you, to be honest with you. And, you know, I spoke to a few dentists and they thought the same thing. You know, time is money. They don't want to take a lot of time to mentor you. So they want someone who's experienced, confident, quick, efficient. So I took their advice and that's why I did it.
You think your GPR made you those things?
I did. Yeah, 100%.
That's interesting. My experience has been the opposite.
Really?
Yes. How so? So I've had two associates. One came from an AEGD and one came from a GPR. And certainly I would say they weren't like straight out of school experience, but I would say that my experience with them is that they were more ingrained in the dental school mentality because residency is, from my perspective, mentally another year of dental school where you have to have everything checked, where everything is more about, it's just one more year of not seeing your long-term results, one more year of doing things that maybe you probably shouldn't do, but having another year of somebody watching you, and then maybe you take on things you shouldn't do.
Right. So I agree. I mean, with the liability, you're right. But from my experience, the program I went to Loyola, really with our director, he was very, very laid back. So we controlled our schedule. And if we had a question, we would have to grab him because he had his own schedule as well, his own patients, his own full day. So unless we grabbed him or we were skeptical about what we're doing, he wouldn't check anything.
Yeah, but so that means, okay, so anyway,
But then there's a bad thing to that is like, what if you're doing something bad and you're continuing to do it? How are you going to learn?
Right, exactly.
Which is probably what you were going to say.
Yeah, I just didn't want to say it. Okay. So, but it sounds to me like you enjoyed your time there and you thought it was worthwhile.
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
I got some experience with implants and that was nice. So really,
but I would say you got bad experience with implants personally.
What's that?
I would say you probably got bad experience with implants.
Why?
Because you didn't get experience with 3D technology, with modern implantology, you got experience with your slam it in implantology, where you lay a flap and you just put the implant in and you hope it's in the right spot and all of that stuff.
So I was at the VA. So the way the residency worked was 8 months at a private field practice affiliated with a hospital. And then the last four months for me was at the VA. So there I was working hand in hand with the director of oral surgery. So it was nice because it was very one-on-one. So with implants, it's not that I did many. I did a total of 5, actually. He was in there, you know, guiding me. But yes, with the 3D imaging, I got zero experience with. And I wish I would have had more experience. That was more for the oral surgery residents. And now, I mean, I kind of regret that I didn't get really, I mean, I didn't know. It was just, I was new to it.
Right.
And now working, that's like the next step for me. Like I want to learn. I want to engage more into that kind of stuff. But it was very limited experience that I got with implants, but it was a start.
Okay. Now, what would you say? So what were the benefits of a GPR then?
Just gaining more confidence, especially with your speed. Coming out of dental school, we'd probably allot like 2 hours for a crown, something like that.
Oh, hell, we spent all morning during the crown prep.
Exactly. And then temporizing, you know, if you go to a private office, the owner is not going to like that. Okay.
Unless you get paid on production, take all damn day.
Exactly. So the one thing that I would say is the speed. I got really fast with a lot of procedures and I was comfortable doing them.
Okay. So what did you get more experience in endo?
I did. I did a lot more endo with molar. That was another big thing. You know, dental school was a lot of anteriors, a lot of premolars, not so many molars. So I got a lot more experience with that in the GPR residency as well. I wanted to get comfortable with the surgical extractions because I did zero
in school.
Or if anything, there was either supervision or I had to assist doing it. But me, myself, I never had to do it. So with the GPR, while I was at the VA, I got a ton of experience with surgical extraction. So that was really cool.
What about IV sedation? Did you learn that? You get certified in that?
No certification. We did an anesthesia rotation for 2 weeks where we got to intubate patients and, you know, work with the anesthesia residents. But in terms of certification, zero.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I got some more questions. So I'm asking these questions because I'm a little anti-GPR and anti-AGD for maybe selfish reasons or whatever. So did you pay to go to this thing?
No, we got paid.
How much did you get paid?
About 50. So it was like a stipend. It was like a salary, you know, so it was about 50. And I mean, it was very hard, especially being in Chicago. It's so expensive.
So you got paid 50 grand. So it's like I guess that's like a PG1, postgraduate year one salary.
Exactly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. All right. So let me ask you this retrospectively. Okay. And I would probably say it's a little bit of an unfair question to you because I don't think. So anyway, let me back up for a second. You graduated what year?
Dental school?
Yes.
2015.
Okay. So you just finished your residency maybe 6 months ago or 4 months ago.
Yeah. About 4 months ago.
And it's June. Okay, so you've been in, quote unquote, the real world for 4 months.
Yep.
Okay, great. So I think this question may be a little unfair, but I want to throw this out there, okay?
Sure.
So I'm a little against AGDs, the GPRs, or whatever these things are, from a couple of perspectives. One, I think an opposite way of doing these is most people go to these programs because they want more experience and they want to get their speed up, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So one way I think of looking at it may be, is that you can take a job out of school, maybe in a group type practice. Many people call them corporate offices. I tend to call them large group practices, okay, multi-location practices. And you can work on your speed there. And let's call it you'll make 120 grand or so, 100, 120 grand, somewhere in that ballpark. And what you can do, and from my perspective, is you can pretend like you're making 50 grand a year. And you can take that additional $40,000 to $50,000 that you'll have, and you can take a significant amount of CE. And in today's day and age, for example, you can take some implant courses where maybe you go to the Dominican and you can place 30 to 40 implants. And maybe you can go on 2 or 3 of those Dominican trips. And then you can do some 3D education and you can do some different things and some endo education. You know, I look at that from as a more practical perspective of getting your speed up. What do you think about something like that?
100%. So in my class, and that was my struggle, to be honest with you, it was deciding whether I wanted to go into corporate straight out of school.
I don't like the word corporate, but that's okay.
Or group practice.
you can call it corporate. That's fine with me.
or going to do a GPR. And that was my struggle. And to be honest with you, about half of my class did corporate and the other half probably did either a GPR, AGD, or specialized.
So, you know, the numbers are about 60% of graduating dentists enter into the DSO market, the dental support organizations, the quote unquote corporate offices, the DSOs. About 60% of graduating dentists today enter into some DSO group.
Exactly. And that's pretty much what how the breakdown was in my graduating class. And the way I saw it was I would do my GPR residency. And if someone did a corporate, that would be their type of residency. That's their 1 year of residency. But I didn't want to, I saw kind of like a pattern with some of the other colleagues that had graduated before me that started corporate and they stayed in corporate.
They never left.
And I didn't want that for myself. Like my vision is I want to own my own practice eventually. And I did not want to be part of corporate. You know, I went to their lunch and learns, everything. I heard it all.
Oh, you wanted you wanted the free lunch.
Exactly. And it sounded good. It sounds like a very good deal. It sounds like, you know, no pressure, baggage off your shoulders. It's like you're getting into it and you know what to expect. And that's great. It's like 1, 2, 3, and it's delivered to you. But I didn't want this type of corporate feel to dictate how I should practice or just dictate everything about how the practice should run.
Do you really think they do that? Do you really think they do that?
Yeah, I do. And I do know that you need to meet a certain quota. Okay, if not.
I don't think the word, that's illegal.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, of course it is.
I'll take it back. You have to meet a certain, I don't know, what would you call it?
Look, I think it's at the end of the day, meeting anything, any type of quota, any type, whatever you want to call it, technically it's illegal, okay? You can't do that in the healthcare field. But at the end of the day, I think certainly they have goals for you that they want you to do to earn your pay, okay?
So, a goal is a better word, yes.
Yeah, I mean, so certainly if you're producing $500 a day, you know, they don't want to keep you around. I mean, I get that, okay? But at the same time, they can't force you to diagnose stuff that doesn't exist.
Right. Just from personal experience, like I kind of heard like these horror stories, like it's all numbers and not so much quality. And I did not invest so much money and time in dental school to provide, you know, work that wasn't quality. Sure, anyone could do the numbers. Anyone could do the work. Anyone that graduates dental school can do the work, okay? But it's about the quality, you know? And if you care, and I do, you know, I knew that that wasn't for me. And it works for a lot of people. And a lot of my best friends that I graduated with are in corporate. And some of them like them. Some of them like corporate and some of them hate it. So it's just, I guess, based on your personal experience. It's also based on like location.
I think it also based on your personality. So, or what you make of it.
100%. Yes.
So
for
like,
sure.
Like I came out of dental school and I worked in a DSO type environment for 6 months. But I made the most of it for 6 months. I went in with the plan of this, and I wouldn't recommend people to go into a job only for 6 months. And that wasn't my intention to go just for 6 months. But I knew my goal when I went in was not to become used to living on a lifestyle of 120 grand. Because at the end of the day, today, I don't think that's a lot of money. Okay. But when I got out of dental school, I thought that was a boatload of money. Okay. And so I didn't get accustomed to making the money. I lived on my dental school salary, which was like living off $2,000 a month or whatever it was. Okay. So,
sure.
So I used my first year out of school as a quote unquote residency year. And I went and I tried to learn and I took a lot of CE. And so the money I made above and beyond what it cost me to live, I used that towards paying off any student loans. And I used that towards taking a lot of education. So I never felt what many people call these golden handcuffs. I never felt that because I didn't allow myself to get in that position.
Sure. And I kind of want to backtrack. You made a very good point about taking that time in the 1 year instead of doing a GPR. For example, if you go into corporate, using that extra cash for CE, because that's one thing I'm struggling with now since I was so confined with budgeting this past year while I was in, you know, my residency. I'm struggling now. Yeah, I'm getting paid well, but I'm struggling with trying to take CE courses because I'm trying to do that and save money. So,
and any student loans you may have.
Exactly. So you made a very good point because that is one thing that I never even took into account a year ago because coming out of residency, yeah, you feel better, you know, you're faster, but you want to be good at everything. And to be good at everything, you want to learn more. And by doing that, you need to go to take CE courses. And I'm at a point where I want to take all these courses, but it's like, I don't have the funds for it right now. So you made a very good point about that.
Why don't you have the funds for it?
I mean, they're expensive. They're very expensive. And I'm trying to save and I'm trying to pay off loans. So I figure I have to give myself every couple of months, maybe, you know, every 4 or 6 months, take a course.
Okay.
You know, I think if I spread it out like that, but I'm saying like right now, there's like 5 different things I want to take, and that's impossible. There's no way I can do that right now. Maybe in the future, when I'm more stable.
But don't ever think it's impossible.
Oh, definitely not. I know I'll be able to do so in the future. It's just right now, I mean, like it's been 4 months. So
I know I've been out in the real world. So let's let me ask you this. Okay. So you chose, I want to go backwards. I don't want to get too much corporate talk anymore. So you got out of your residency. You knew you wanted to go back to Miami because I assume you want to be close to your family.
Yep.
And that's where people speak Latino.
Okay? Exactly.
So you went back to Miami. Do you work for your childhood dentist?
No.
Why not?
She's retired.
Okay.
And the dentist that I worked for those 6 months, he moved. He moved to Texas, actually.
Was he one of those fake dentists in Miami? I read about them all the time.
No. He was very well established, good location, and
that still doesn't mean he wasn't a real dentist.
He was a very real dentist. He actually took his DATs.
Oh, that is good. You got me back. That's awesome. That's awesome. I don't even know what to say to that. Okay, so how did you choose where you're working?
So I started looking for a job early on around March. So I was still in my residency.
Okay.
And I was searching for jobs
You knew you wanted to go back to Miami. That's the only place you looked.
Yes. Okay. The only place.
All right.
And it was because of family. I mean, the main reason is, you know, my family's growing at a very high rate right now. I have a lot of nieces and nephews and they're still coming. And
Are they coming legally?
I didn't want to miss out on that, I guess. So, I'm sorry, did you say something?
I made a joke. I said, are they coming legally?
They're very, very legal, yes. So, I didn't want to miss out on that.
Okay.
And so, I didn't see a reason why I should be looking elsewhere. So, I came back.
All right, so how'd you choose your place? Was it
in
hard?
In terms of how did I apply?
Were there a lot of choices?
A lot of choices, but I was very specific. I knew what I wanted, and I didn't want, for example, an HMO-driven office. So I did apply to a lot of...
Let me answer this. How do you know you don't want that?
It's same thing with the numbers. I know it's a lot of quantity and not so much... I don't want to say... It's just what I've heard.
Right. So that's what I wanted you to say. These are all perceptions that other people have made you believe.
Exactly.
So let me ask you this, and I mean this, and I want you to be honest with me. Okay, would you believe that I personally am a good dentist?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So if I told you that I had an HMO practice 10 years ago, what would you say to that?
That would be admirable.
So I had an HMO practice 10 years ago.
Okay.
So not all HMO practices are
to
bad.
To add to that. Yes. And one thing, a mentor of mine during dental school, I was catching up with him when I moved back, and he said the exact same thing to me. He's like, Jen, I don't want you to be afraid of applying to these HMO-based practices. I had an HMO practice, and it went great for him. It was very, very successful. It grew tons.
Well, yeah, but see, I'm not even talking about, like, I don't think money is the issue right now in your life. I mean, I get there's a certain amount you have to make. But I don't think money should be the driving issue, and I don't qualify success in how big it is or how fast it grows or how much money it makes. I qualify success in terms of the happiness it brings you and if it meets your goals for what you have for yourself. And I will tell you that for me, my HMO practice helped me tremendously establish a general dentistry base, allowed me to make money to establish CE. I used it to do good dentistry on people. I didn't do bad dentistry. I mean, I know that generally speaking, to run an HMO practice, you have to run people through faster. But that doesn't mean that it's a bad place to work, or that doesn't mean that it's lesser dentistry than a person that is not an HMO dentist.
Right. I think I was biased because that first dentist that I worked for, it was a fee-for-service practice. And since that was the only thing I was exposed to at first, I kind of engraved that. And that's all they talked about. He's like, "Get it, you have to be in fee-for-service. You know, dealing with insurance is a big headache."
Oh, it is a headache.
So I think that even before dental school, I already had that in the back of my mind. So I guess I kind of steered away from it.
Okay.
To be honest.
So your pool of what you were looking for was very small then?
Yes.
Okay. So how many practices like that are out there?
Very little.
Okay.
In Miami. It's very, very little. I mean, there's a lot of HMO practices here, lots of PPO.
But you were looking for a fee-for-service practice.
And PPO.
And okay.
PPO and fee-for-service, yeah.
So you're willing to settle on a PPO?
Yes.
Okay.
100%, yeah.
Poor you. How noble of you. All right. So what drew you to the practice that you're at now?
Stay with us. We'll be right back. Hello, podcast family. T-Bone here, bringing you our newest live patient implant training, Full Arch Express. For dentists already placing implants and ready to level up and continue building their implant practice, this is the golden ticket. We're diving deep into full arch implants, the hottest game changer in implant dentistry. In this program, we tackle both overdentures and all-on-X fixed hybrids, mastering techniques that are essential for modern, comprehensive dental care. It's about getting your hands on the tools and techniques that will replace the doubt and fear with confidence and predictability. Here's the kicker. There's live patient training right here in North Carolina. You're not just learning theories. You're in the operatory doing real work on real patient from start to finish, guided one-on-one by our expert 3D mentors. You'll learn the nuances of each approach, ensuring you can cater to a wide range of patients to maximize revenue. Speaking of revenue, with me, you know it's not just about the clinical skills. We're bringing business into this aspect too, teaching you how to integrate these advanced services profitably into your practice. So are you ready to rise up to the top in implant dentistry? Join us at the Full Arch Express. This isn't just another course, it's a career-defining leap. Head to www.3ddentist.com to enroll in our next session. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now, back to this week's episode.
So I did my first interview, and I really liked the feel of the office. I met with the office manager. She was great.
What do you mean by the feel? Talk to me about that.
It was very busy. It was very hype, very lively, and I liked that. I liked
like busy as in chaotic?
No, not chaotic, but it was a good flow.
Okay.
It wasn't like a zoo in the waiting room, and it wasn't like there was one person in the waiting room either. It was like a good balance.
Okay.
And, you know, she was very, you know, honest with me. She's like, "I want you to come back for a work interview. I'm not going to give you the job just yet." And I'm like, okay, perfect. Because in a sense, you know, I'm kind of interviewing them as well.
Right.
I need to know if it's a good place for myself. So I was like, 100%, I'll do the work interview. So I came back and I did. I had to travel back and forth from Chicago to do these just because when I came back, I wanted to have something ready to go.
Did they pay for you to come back and forth?
No. But they did pay for the work interview.
Okay. No, they paid you to work, but they didn't pay you to come there.
No.
Okay. All right.
And so I did the work interview and it worked out. You know, I got along with everybody just great. And so that's how I got it.
Okay. So what would you rank as the most, I'm asking this selfishly, okay?
Go ahead.
Because, so what was important to you or more important? How would you rank these things? How important was the team members? How important was the management of the office? And how important was the dentist that you would be working with?
I think the management was the most important thing I was looking for. How they dealt with the patients. I asked about like their philosophy, who treatment coordinates, for example, like who talks about pricing. Just like the overall management, I'd say would be the most important
thing. The patient workflow.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly.
All right. Mm-hmm. And what about the team?
So it was very hard in the beginning to see, you know, especially in the front desk, because I didn't really get to talk to them so much, you know, since I was in the work interview, for example, I was just doing my patients and dealing with the assistants. So really, I was only able to rate the assistants, and they were great. I saw that they were very hard workers. They helped you a lot. They didn't, you know, they didn't have attitude. And so that stood out a lot to me. The front desk, since I didn't really get to interact with them much, I didn't know that they had been there for many years.
Did that mean something to you?
It did.
Okay. So did the doctor have the team take you out to lunch?
No.
Okay.
No. I mean, the way I see it, and this is another thing I appreciate in that practice, because I think it's something that I would, you know, instill in my practice in the future, is we don't really have a lunch break. I mean, we'll have a 30-minute lunch break, but to me, that's kind of like a luxury when you're working. As an assistant, yes, or a hygienist, they should definitely be entitled to their lunch break. But for me, I mean, I'm not even thinking about it. I'm just, you know, I snack here and there. So no lunch break. We didn't do anything for that.
Okay. All right. And so did you interview at places you didn't like?
I did.
And what made you not like those places?
The way they talk to the patients, the attitude.
Be more specific with me.
Well, the assistants, for example. There was one assistant that kind of had attitude with the patient, and I didn't like that at all. I kind of overheard. I was sitting in the office.
What was that, unique, or was that just generally accepted in the practice?
I have no idea. I mean, I would love to know that. But that was my first time there. I kind of overheard it while I was sitting in the doctor's office. And I was like, what is this? I mean, I was completely turned off. And it's just the vibe that I got from the office, it wasn't very welcoming. Something as little in the waiting room, there wasn't a lot of, you know, pictures or anything about patient education. To me, that's a lot. And I was turned off. I was honestly just turned off.
Did you choose the job that paid you the most?
No, they all offered the same compensation.
Okay. So from a money perspective, yeah, they were all equal or relatively equal.
They were all equal.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Did you apply anywhere that you liked that turned you down?
No.
No. Okay.
No.
It's hard for women to say that. I'm just asking.
But no.
All right.
There were a few places that I applied to. There were a few times where I was, you know, I had a headache. I was like, I don't know what to do, but I ended up making the right choice.
All right. So tell me, so you're happy where you're at?
I am very happy.
So getting you to move to North Carolina is not an option for me?
No, not at this time.
Okay. All right. I'm just saying. I mean, it's not a marriage proposal or anything. I'm just saying. I'm just saying you can come work and learn. I'm just, you know.
I would definitely be willing to go and learn.
All right.
I definitely would. Just as I did a few months ago.
So now let me ask you. So you're happy where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
What makes you happy?
Patient satisfaction.
Okay. Be more specific with me. What does that mean? Like patients like you?
So no, if a patient comes in, you know, hot tooth in pain, you know, and once you get them out of pain from doing whatever it is that you had to do, phlebotomy, IND, whatever it is, that immediate gratification, you know, of saying, oh my God, doc, thank you so much. You know, that thank you means the world to me.
So the patients are appreciative.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So are you happy with your, and I'm not trying to put your doc on the spot or anything like that. I'm trying to understand. See, to me, this, I love doing this with you specifically, because selfishly, I'm trying to get in the mind of your generation, because I'm struggling in my office with attracting and maintaining and finding the exact right fit, and or really connecting and cultivating the right fit with somebody. And so,
are you talking about it as an associate?
Yeah, I mean, somebody to work with me as an associate. Yes.
Okay.
So we've had good people. We've had some not so good people, and a lot of times it's just a personality fit sometimes. But so, what about your procedure mix? Are you happy with what you're doing, or are there times where you wish you could do more, or do you know your limitations, or do you have limitations?
I do on
yourself. I'm not talking about what the practice may limit you to.
Yes, I do. I definitely do. And these are things that I have talked to the senior doc about. Because like I said before, when I got out of the residency, I wanted to be good at everything. I got exposed just a little tiny bit, you know, with implants, and boom, like I want to do more. But with that, I mean, fortunately, the senior doc, he has the 3D imaging, and I don't know how to use it. I don't know how to read it. I don't know how to plan things. I did a few implants in my residency, but I want to do more. And so these are things that I've shared with him, and he's been willing to, you know, mentor me and, you know, and You know, if he has like an implant case, he'll sit down. We've talked about him sitting down with me and going over the planning part of it. But that's one major limitation I had. The other limitation I have in the beginning was with Steric. At Nova, we got exposed to it, but it was very limited. I didn't do any Steric cases on any live patients at all. And coming into this practice, he uses Steric for everything. And I was a little intimidated at first because I didn't remember how to use Steric. I didn't use Steric during my residency. So I was like, gosh, like I have to go take a course now, because although the assistants are very, very comfortable doing a lot of things with Steric, I felt like as a doctor, it was my duty to know everything from A to Z.
What? You have to know everything before you can expect your assistant? Oh my God, that's amazing. No, I say that sarcastically because that's what I believe. So let me ask you this on that end. When you started, was it an option for you to send things to the lab traditionally, or did you have to use Steric right away?
There's definitely an option to use an outside lab, but obviously it's preferable to do it in-house and use Steric. And I agree with that. I would prefer to do Steric instead of sending something out to the lab.
Okay. So how long?
Like using PVS. I mean, no one likes taking final impressions. I think there are a lot of, it's a convenience thing. So I wanted to learn Steric and become good at it. And although I was intimidated at first, you know, I got a hang of it, and he showed me a lot of things, and that's how we got to talking about taking your course.
Okay. So let me ask you this. Now let's talk about the mentoring side of, So let me back up for a second. So you didn't have to use Steric, but you felt that you should use it.
Yes.
Okay.
I was like, wow, this is an amazing opportunity that I have, that he has Steric, you know, and a milling machine at the office, because not many dentists do. And I was exposed to it a little bit. Now this is the perfect opportunity for me to get really good at it.
Okay. And okay, so now let's talk about the mentoring side of things. How much did he work with you on learning these things? And how much of it was you going to learn?
It was more so me, because, you know, he... And I'm sure like with any dentist that has an associate, you guys have your full schedule. You guys are busy. He's very, very busy. He's nonstop. So that was one of the other reasons why I was like, okay, I need to take a course, because I know he's not going to have that much time to sit down with me every time I have a question about something. I mentioned before, time is money. And it's true. He's great about answering questions and be willing to mentor me, but it's finding the time for it. So it was more so like me going up to him, or me, you know, picking the brain of like the assistants, like, you know, asking him questions, because I would see the assistants, you know, planning the restorations, designing. And I'm like, okay, what are you doing? Like, what's this shortcut? Like, what's that? Like, to me, I felt like I was asking a lot of stupid questions because they were so quick at it. And I didn't like that feeling. I didn't like the feeling of like being incompetent with Steric. You know, that's like the future. And I was like, there's no other way. Like, I have to take a course.
So he didn't walk you through. Certainly he did a little bit, but he didn't like say, you don't need training. I can teach you everything.
He said, you should go take this course.
Okay. Yeah. Perfect. And you said blindly said yes.
Yes. I said yes, 100%.
Okay.
Because there's a steep learning curve. It's like, it's through cases that you learn. It's not, okay, let's sit down. For that, he would have to cancel a morning or an afternoon and sit down with me while I'm doing a case on a patient.
That's the best way to learn. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like, okay, after hours, no one's there. Let's sit down in front of a Steric machine and go step by step. That's not the way to do it. So I asked him, like, are there any courses that you would suggest for me to take? Because I feel like I don't want to rely on the assistant 100%. I need to learn. And he's like, okay, well, you know, and he started talking about 3D dentists, you guys.
Okay, so you took these classes, or you took this class. Is that the first CE class you've ever taken outside of school?
I took Invisalign during my residency.
Oh, that doesn't count. not that it's no good. It's not that. It's just, it doesn't count, because that's more
it wasn't
that's
hands
a certifi-
on.
That's
it
a certification class.
Exactly. It was a few hours. So yes, your course was the first one I took.
Okay. So, all right. So what else is on your list? So what else do you want to take?
So other than what we talked about, implant and CBCT, I want to learn more about, I know this may sound kind of stupid and you may make fun of me, but Botox. on fillers.
But there's actually some good training down there in Fort Lauderdale, Miami for that.
Really?
Yeah, I think Arun Garg, or there's a Dental Spa Seminars does that.
Okay. Yeah, Arun Garg. Yeah, that's one guy that's one dentist that's on my mind. Like, you know, like he obviously, I'm sure you know, with the whole Dominican.
I'll set you up with him. I'll introduce you guys.
Oh, that'd be great.
I know him pretty well. He's not going to give you a deal or anything, but at least I can introduce you to him and you guys can meet or something.
Sure. That would be wonderful. He's very involved with the implants and training.
He's fantastic.
And that's another thing that, you know, the senior doc and I talk about all the time. I'm like, what implant course should I take? And that's one name that always comes up.
Okay. And he's down the street from you guys.
He is. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And Frank Spear. I've always been wanting to take his courses, and maybe something with usage of lasers. I haven't used implemented lasers at all, and the doctor at the office uses them, and I don't know how to use it.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Okay, so now I'm going to be tough on you a little bit. Okay.
Okay.
So no, I mean, I'm not trying to be tough on you, but I'm just trying to understand. Okay. So
sure.
Here's what I've heard from you. I've heard unbelievably good things from you. Okay. So, mm-hmm. So I hear all the great hallmarks of somebody that's going to be great. Okay. You came out of school. You knew you had a good idea of what you wanted to do. You're a little biased, which is not so great, but a little bit biased. Okay. But you knew what you wanted to do. It sounds like you made good choices in where you went to work. You have great drive in the sense that you recognize that you don't know everything, which is one of the challenges I've had with my associates in the last 2 years has been that their desire to take education has been lackluster at the best. Frustratingly enough, they haven't even taken the CE that's free to them, which is my own CE.
That was actually a question I had for you. What frustrations you have with an associate?
Let's come back to that. Mm-hmm. I want you to ask that, okay? Because I'd like to talk about that, okay? So I see lots of good things. And then the CE that you're talking about, generally speaking, are all very good CEs. But the other thing I'm hearing from you is that there are a lot of things in your practice that you don't know how to do. So that, to a certain degree, holds you back from being more successful within your practice.
Yes. And that's definitely a topic that we always talk about as well. Because just last week, I told him, like, listen, you have a surgical microscope, you have the lasers, you have the PIPS, which is a laser activated irrigation for, you know, endo.
Endo, yeah.
I said this exact same thing. I said, I feel very limited right now because, you know, anyone can drill and fill, anyone can do a crown, but, you know, you have all these cool gadgets, you know, and systems that I feel so limited and I want to learn how to use them.
But why learn everything? Why not focus one thing at a time?
That's a good way to see it. I mean, yeah.
How are you going to be good at everything?
I know. I know. And someone did tell me that.
You're 4 months out of residency. Let's call it 4 months out of school.
Yeah.
How can you learn all of these different things?
I know. I'm just hard on myself. I don't know what it is. And one dental colleague told me, I mean, he's been practicing for 4 years. He's like, because I told him the same thing. I'm like, I want to learn all these things. And he's like, okay, I suggest that you become very good at one thing. Okay, become really good at crown and bridge first.
Master your CEREC machine first.
Exactly, right.
And here's why I say that selfishly, okay? Because let's say you open your own practice. So let's say you go somewhere else. That place you go may not have a laser. It may not have a microscope. It may not have PIPS and all of these things. But no matter what you do, you will always do inlays, onlays, crowns, all of these things.
Yeah, so that's the bread and butter.
So that skill that you learn, that skill that you master now, will serve you for the rest of your career.
Yeah.
And then here's my other advice to you that I didn't hear from you that of the things you want to learn. What about communication and patient education and how to talk to people and how to understand where people stand and how to take people from, hey, I don't want to do anything but what my insurance covers, and helping them see need or want in things they need. And to me, that's what's really made my practice in my mind stand out as an initially HMO practice to a PPO practice that does more complex dental care, is that we take patients that are HMO, we don't have HMOs anymore, but we take patients that are PPOs and we convert them into patients that do complex dental care.
Right. See, that's one thing that I kind of experienced during my residency. We would have these mentors come in and talk to us about how to deal with patient objections and how to communicate effectively. And they would come once a month just, and it was solely just talking about patient communication skills. But coming into this practice, I really haven't had that opportunity to do so much of that just because I kind of, you know, diagnose and then that's it. I'm out the door. Yeah, I'll do some patient education, obviously, but it's...
But there's a difference. That's answering a patient's, yes. Hey, I got a cracked tooth. I need a crown.
Right.
That's education.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's, hey, I mean, to me, there's more to it, right?
Yeah, and
there's so much more to it.
I completely agree with you. And yeah, that's one thing that I guess I'm lacking in that I should work
on. So let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. Can you spend $30 on something?
Do I spend $30 on something? Yes.
Can you spend $30 on something?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I want you to go to Amazon and I want you to buy a book from Paul Hommely called Isn't It Great When Patients Say Yes? I think the book is like $25 or something.
Okay.
And then I want you to go to his website, paulhommely.com. And for $10, you can download his, it's like 4 hours, a 5 hour lecture, MP3 of his lecture.
Isn't It Great When a Patient Says Yes?
Yes.
Okay.
That's the name of it. Yeah.
All right.
And,
I'll definitely look into that. That would be...
No, don't look into it. No, don't look into it.
No, I will do it. I'll buy it tonight.
So you do it. Okay, good. I'm just saying. it's called Making It Easy for Patients to Say Yes. The book is $20. You can buy it on his website, paulhommely.com.
Okay.
Okay. And then the other one is Making It Easy for Patients to Say Yes, the MP3 download, and it is $10.
Okay.
On his website. Okay. So for $30, I bought this. I mean, the stuff is 15 years old. Okay. But I bought this 10 or 15 years ago and I still listen to it every year throughout the year.
Wow. Nice.
Okay. So to me, the problem with the most important thing. So I go back to one of the most important lessons my dad gave me, and I've gotten a lot of lessons from my dad, but one of the most important lessons he gave me was, I was taking so much CE my first year out of school that he said to me once, he said, you're learning how to do all these clinical skills, but not once have you gotten a patient to say yes to you.
And that's the most important part of the entire process.
It doesn't matter how much you learn how to do.
Yeah.
And so here's the truth. Most people take CE and 90% of them will never do some of the advanced things they learn how to do because they don't know how to get patients to say yes, or they don't set up their practice workflow for patients to say yes to those things.
So let me ask you a question. Who presents, do you present a treatment to your patients?
Yes and no. I mean, so basically here's how it kind of works.
Okay.
So I walk into a room and I teach me and my team to break people into three categories. One is no treatment, somebody that needs no treatment. In other words, we just need to schedule them for a recall visit.
Okay.
Minor treatment. In other words, somebody that we can put together a treatment plan that day. And minor treatment for everybody will vary from, like if I said to you, somebody needs $5,000 to $8,000 worth of dentistry, that may sound like a major treatment plan to you, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. And to me, that's a minor treatment plan.
Okay.
Like I can do that with my eyes closed, planning that out.
All right.
Okay. But 10 years ago, it might've been $2,000 or $3,000.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now today for me, it might be up to $10,000. That's a minor treatment plan. And then I have major treatment plans.
Okay.
Okay, so major treatment plans are things that I got to think about, things that require coordination of care, maybe with phasing of treatment, maybe with specialists, maybe with internal specialists, like where I act as a specialist, like when I do implants, when I do ortho, when I do some perio work,
mm-hmm.
or things like that. So interdisciplinary dentistry. So we try to categorize people in that way.
Okay.
So when I with no treatment, I call them social visits. I walk in and I'm planting seeds and I'm saying hello to patients and I'm talking about just I'm creating a relationship with them. Okay. And I'll plant a seed. I might ask them, you know, like today I had a lot of social visits with patients and I plant seeds. I ask them, you know, are you sleeping well? You know, are you snoring? Does your bed partner snore? Things like that.
Okay.
And because I'm planting seeds because they have nothing left to do.
Of course.
Okay. And we schedule them for their 4, 5, 6 month, whatever we're doing with them. Okay. So no treatment is that. Minor treatment, I walk in and, you know, I'll say, these are the things we recommend. Hopefully I'm just agreeing with one of my team members who has what I call, I like to call them my wingman.
Okay.
Okay. So like a wingman kind of makes it easy for you to go ask a girl out or a boy out or whatever it is, right? They kind of set the stage for you.
Okay.
Okay. So I hopefully my hygienist, my assistant, whoever has set the stage that these are the things we want to do. And in our office, our rule is we don't recommend any treatment without a photograph of what we're recommending.
Okay.
So if we're recommending that you have grafting done, I better see a picture of the recession that you have.
No, and okay, it's more of a chance for the patient to say yes with pictures.
Well, it's also it's a way to make sure that your patient doesn't question that you're making this up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if we're recommending to replace an older filling because it's starting to break down, I want to see a picture of that.
Yes.
Okay, so we want to be able to show our patient that. And then I'll walk in and my whole goal is to say, I agree with so-and-so, this needs to be taken care of. Here are the reasons, and I point to the photograph. Do you have any clinical questions for me?
Thanks so much for listening to T-Bone Speaks with Dr. Tarun Agarwal. Remember to keep striving for excellence, and we'll catch you on the next episode.